Well, good morning. My name is Ben. I'm the lead pastor here at Core. And whether you're joining us online or you're here in person, we could not be more excited that you have chosen to join us as we kick off this brand new four-week series that we are calling The Good Work. And we thought that there was no more fitting time as we're coming off of the heels of Stand for Shelby and really a deep dive into what we believe is our mission, our purpose, our calling as Core Community Church for the sake of our city, for us to begin to ask and dive into this question. What does it look like for me to begin to discover my own individual purpose, my own individual calling in this life for the sake of this world? You see, this series over the course of the next 4 weeks is designed specifically for you if you find yourself walking into this room craving just a little bit more. That deep down you believe that you were created for a little bit more significance, that you wanted to make just a little bit more impact. That as you look at your life, there's this desire for something that lasts, something that makes a difference in your family, in your city, in your workplace, or in this world. And yet, in spite of that desire that lies deep inside of every single one of us for a purpose, for meaning, for significance in all lives and in this world, as we begin to chase that, we come face to face with this reality. That maybe for many of us, we walked into this room and we've had this craving that we've acknowledged for the last several weeks or months or years, and yet we've pushed it to the back burner of all lives under this premise. That what we acknowledge about ourselves is that we feel just kind of ordinary. That we weren't the top of our class, we were never the star athlete, we're not the best worker in our workplace, we don't have all the answers, we don't have it all together. And because of that, is it really possible that I can make a difference? Because I'm not the best of the best and I don't have my life all together, or I'm not the smartest or the brightest or have the most skills, is it possible that I can actually make an impact in the world around me? Is it possible that my city or my workplace or my family or my world can change on the heels of what I can do? And you see, if you walked into this place with any inclination of those feelings, that you're just ordinary, my hope is that over the course of the next 4 weeks, as we journey through this series, that this truth will begin to be uncovered in your life and in your story. That we have a God that specializes in using ordinary people to do extraordinary things. That we have a God who's in the business of taking what you feel like are your shortcomings, your shortfalls, your lack of and not good enough, and turning it into something incredible that can impact the city and the world around you. You see, he doesn't need you to be qualified. He doesn't need you to be a genius or have all the answers. He doesn't need you to be wealthy. He doesn't even need you to have your life together. You see, we have a God who simply needs you to have a willingness to chase that craving that lies deep inside of you. A willingness to chase that craving for more, and a willingness to tap into just a little bit of that courage that lives deep inside of you, to begin to chase the impact that you have been designed to make in some way in which only you can make it. But before we dive into that reality, this reality that we have a God that is for us and wants something more for us, it's imperative that we get honest about this one truth. This truth that lies at the core of us pursuing a greater purpose and a greater meaning for our lives, pursuing significance and becoming a difference maker. You see, what we must acknowledge at the outset of this journey to discover more in our lives and for our futures is that it won't be easy. Is that this journey will be difficult along the way, and we will experience difficulties. We will experience failures. We will experience plenty of moments of sweat equity. We will experience loneliness. We'll experience failures. We will experience moments where we endure attacks from other people and even from the enemy along the way. But hear me on this. When our sacrifice impacts another's life, it's far easier for us to overlook the cost. As along the way, we will experience difficulties, but when our sacrifice impacts somebody else's life, it is far easier for us to overlook the cost. But the question we're all faced with is this. Well, if I'm being called to this craving inside of me for something more, for something better, for a little bit more significance, what moves me in that direction? What moves me towards my purpose, my meaning, my calling for my future? And the answer to that question is ridiculously simple. You see, there is one simple thing in our life that begins to move us towards a greater meaning and a greater purpose for our future, and that is this. It's a disdain for the way things are. What moves us from where we are to where we were designed to be is a disdain for the status quo. A disdain for the way things are in our family, in our marriage, in our city, in our workplace, or in our world. That we're tired of the way things are, and because of that, it moves us to begin to explore how can we can begin to fix those things, or change those things, or bring about something better within those things. You see, if we find ourselves simply okay with the way things are, we will never move towards lasting change. And the fact of the matter is this, is that in every single one of our lives, in every single one of our stories, in every single one of our cravings for more meaning and more purpose in our future, until the pain of staying the same becomes greater than the pain of change, there will be no change. We've all experienced this in our stories and in our past. Until we come to a point in our lives where we can look at our lives or the world around us and recognize that the pain of staying the same is far greater than the pain I'll have to go through to enact change, there will never be change that matters. You see, every single one of us are being called to look at the world around us and to begin to ask the question, is your life really the best that it can be? Is your city really the best that it can be? Is our world really the best that it could be? And if we got honest about any of those three questions, my guess is that for every single one of us, the resounding answer to those questions would be no. Am I right? That our lives aren't the very best that they could be. That our city hasn't yet reached the best that it can be. And we'd be crazy to say that our world in general is the best that it could be. And if the fact of the matter is the answer to those questions is no, they're not where they should be, then what if it was time to get to work? What if you and I had a role to play in making those things better from this day forward? You see, 2,500 years ago, we come across the story of a man named Nehemiah. And what we see out of Nehemiah's story is that he began to ask those questions and come face to face with the exact same answer that you and I had in response to those questions. Is my life the very best it could be? Is my city the very best it could be? Is my world the very best it could be? And when he answered those three questions with a resounding no, just like you and I do, this is the determination he came to. In Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 18, we see this. And when he saw that things weren't as good as they could or should be, it says, so they began the good work. They recognized that this was the moment in time in which they were called to jump in, to get dirty, to dive into the messes of their city and their world and to actually do something about it. Nehemiah began to realize that somebody's got to do something, and so it might as well be me. And yet when we look back at the story of this guy named Nehemiah, here's what we begin to uncover. Nehemiah didn't come from a wealthy upbringing. Nehemiah was not royalty. Nehemiah didn't come from a position in his life in which everything was set up for success in his future. Nehemiah was never the smartest guy at the table, never the richest guy at the table. Nehemiah wasn't a warrior. He had never been a part of an army. In fact, when we pick up Nehemiah's story, to this point in his story, Nehemiah has never even been in a leadership position in his life. And yet what we find about Nehemiah is that Nehemiah is living out his life in an occupation that takes very little qualifications. Nehemiah's occupation, when we pick up his story, is that Nehemiah is the cupbearer for the king of the nation of Babylon. He is serving under King Artaxerxes. And what we know is that Nehemiah's role as cupbearer is simply this: to thwart one of the ways in which people would attempt to overthrow the kingdom by killing the king. That 2,500 years ago, if we can take ourselves back in some historical context, what we know is this, is that the number one way in which you begin to overthrow a kingdom is by making sure that the king of that kingdom dies. And one of the sneakiest ways that you can make sure that the king dies and overthrow the kingdom is by poisoning his food. And so 2,500 years ago, every single king would appoint himself a cupbearer. And the cupbearer's sole responsibility was to test every food that the king was about to eat to ensure that the food wasn't poisoned. And if it was poisoned, you would be the first one to suffer the consequences. You would be the first one to be on the toilet for the next 3 days. You would be the first one to keel over dead. Didn't take a whole lot of qualifications for Nehemiah to have his position. Hopefully, he had a great health insurance policy, but not a whole lot of qualifications. And yet what we also know about this particular position for Nehemiah is this, is that Nehemiah found himself as one of the most trusted men in all of the kingdom. Why do we know that? Because Nehemiah found himself always at the right hand of the king. In every single roundtable discussion about the kingdom and where it was going and whose head was getting chopped off next and what the battle plan was and what they were going to do to become more wealthy or more financially sound as a nation and take the next step, Nehemiah was in the room for every single one of those conversations. He had a great amount of trust and respect in the eyes of the king, of King Artaxerxes. And because of that, what we know about Nehemiah's story is this. As a trusted right-hand man of the king, his life was set. He experienced all of the comforts of life. Everything that the king experienced, Nehemiah also got to experience. All of the food that the king ate, Nehemiah got to eat. He lived in the palace. Like the TV, the satellite package that the king got, Nehemiah got the exact same satellite package. He watched the same channels that the king got on his TV. Nehemiah had his life and his future set. He could have taken care of his family from his position for the rest of his life. And yet what we also know about Nehemiah is this, is that the place in which Nehemiah was living was not his home. In fact, 140 years before we pick up the story of Nehemiah, we encounter another king, a king that preceded Artaxerxes as the king of Babylon. His name, maybe some of you have heard it before, was Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar got the bright idea that he was going to storm and destroy and plunder the city of Jerusalem. And with his giant army, the army of Babylon, they had no problem overcoming the city of Jerusalem. And in overcoming and plundering the city of Jerusalem, what they decided was this: we are going to leave this city in absolute ruins. And so they tore down the walls, they burned the gates, and everyone fled. If for no other reason, the city was no longer safe to inhabit. The walls, the gates of the city were the only thing that kept intruders out and kept you safe within it in ancient times. And because of that, there was absolutely no safety there. And so all of the Jews were exiled from their hometown of Jerusalem. Well, Nebuchadnezzar got a second bright idea. Not only are we going to plunder and destroy the city of Jerusalem, but it would also be nice if we had a few more workers within the Babylon nation. And so what did he do? As many Jews as he could catch fleeing the city of Jerusalem, he took them as slaves and prisoners. He took them captive to become workers for the nation of Babylon. And 140 years later, we pick up the story where Artaxerxes gets this bright idea that all of these Jews have been in captivity for the last 140 years. And he begins to slowly release them and give them the ability to go back to their hometown. And what we see at the beginning of this story is this. Is that as these Jews begin to slowly, family by family, go back to the city of Jerusalem, there is only one option available for how this city can become inhabitable. And it's this. They have to rebuild the walls and the gates of the city. That's the only way it becomes safe. That's the only way they can live there and keep anyone who wants to try to do the same as what Nebuchadnezzar did to them out of the city. And so one by one, they go to work at this tall task of trying to rebuild the walls and the gates of the city of Jerusalem. And one by one, what we find is they fail again and again and again. And we pick up the story of Nehemiah. And one day, Nehemiah is sitting in the palace doing his cupbearer thing, waiting for the next piece of steak to be slid across the table, hoping that this one is not poisoned as well and the health insurance doesn't have to kick in this time. And as he's sitting there, a friend enters through the door of the palace. A friend that he knows has traveled through or traveled around the city of Jerusalem. And Nehemiah has one thing on his mind. Jerusalem is my home. It's where all of my ancestors are from. It is my city, and I want to know how things are going there. And we pick up this story of Nehemiah with this conversation that he has with his friend Hananiah. In Nehemiah chapter 1, starting in verse 2, it says this. And if you haven't done so already, it's a perfect time for you to grab that weekly that you got when you came in. You can crack that baby open. And we've created a notes page specifically for you that'll help you follow along. Or if that's not your style, everything will come up on the screen for you as well. But here is how his conversation with Hananiah goes. Hananiah, one of my brothers, came to visit me with some other men who had just arrived from Judah. I asked them about the Jews who had returned there from captivity and about how things were going in Jerusalem. They said to me, "Things are not going well for those who return to the province of Judah. They are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem has been torn down, and the gates have been destroyed by fire." Essentially, Hananiah delivers this message. The city is in absolute ruins. The people are in bad shape. They are not safe there. They are not able to survive there. Nehemiah, if you want the 30-second version, things are really bad. And as Nehemiah gets the news about the world, about the state of the world in which he lives, about the state of the city that he calls his hometown, his purpose and calling begins to uncover before his eyes. An opportunity for greater meaning. To step into something that wasn't ideal. To step into something that wasn't safe. To step into something that wasn't guaranteed. Nehemiah didn't need to rock the boat. He had the perfect job. He had a job that would set him up for life. He was living in all the comforts and all the luxuries of life that his upbringing did not provide him. And yet in looking out into the mass of the world, he began to see something different that he was being called to. And here's what's so incredible, y'all. If you've never heard this before, this is what you're missing. This is what's so incredible about God's word, God's instruction manual for your life and my life, for your future and my future. That when we look into the story of a guy like Nehemiah and countless others throughout God's word, it begins to not only uncover something about history and about their life and about their story, it also begins to uncover something that is beneficial for your story and my story. That it speaks directly into our lives, directly into our futures, directly into our meaning, our purpose, our calling from this day forward. And the same can be said for this story of Nehemiah. That when we look at the ways in which he uncovered his purpose, his meaning, his calling for his life, we begin to see the ways in which we can also discover our own. You see, when we look into the story of Nehemiah, what we find is this, is that there are three initial steps that Nehemiah takes that begin to lead him in the direction of his calling, his purpose, to make an impact and to have significance in his life and in his world. The first is this. The first way in which you and I can glean off of Nehemiah's story how we move towards the good work is that we first have to be willing to be people who sit down and cry. Who sit down and cry. In verse 4, the story continues like this. When I heard this, that my hometown was in absolute ruins, that the place was a mess, that all of my friends, that all of my family were not safe there, I sat down and I wept. See, Nehemiah was living a comfortable life. And I don't know about y'all, but here's what I can admit about myself. Is that in the context of my own life, when I find myself living a comfortable season, oftentimes it becomes easy for me to scroll right past the difficulties of others. Y'all know what I mean, right? That when I find myself on the mountaintop and things are comfortable and things are going good and I don't have a diagnosis in my life or my immediate family that brings my world crashing down, or things financially seem to be good and we finally crawled out of debt and we're making all the right decisions, it becomes really easy in my own comfortable place to scroll right past everybody else's discomfort. To begin to think, oh, I feel so bad for them. I'm so sorry for them. But that's not my life now. That's not my situation. That's not my circumstances. And I don't know that there's really anything I can do to change it anyways. I can't fix all the problems of the world. I can't fix all the problems of Shelby, Ohio. I can't fix all the problems of my workplace. And so maybe it's just worth turning away and acting as if there are no problems. And you see, every time we ignore the discomfort of others, every time we ignore the messes and the brokenness of our world, we miss out on an opportunity that God is putting in front of our faces to make a difference. You see, you may not be able to change everybody else's hurt, but I guarantee you, you can change somebody else's. That you can do something to step into somebody's life even when you can't step into everybody's life. You see, there's this saying we use around here in our kidmen, actually across all family life. It's from this orange concept. It's a saying that says, do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. But being willing and capable of doing for one, stepping into one person's hurt, means that we have to become people who are willing to look at the brokenness of others, look at the hurt of our city, look at the hurt of our workplaces, look at the hurt of our world, and step into that. And you see, if we are going to be people who are capable of stepping into the messes, there's a question that every single one of us must answer. That if we want to discover our purpose and the meaning that God has for us to do good work in our future, the question we must answer is this: what breaks my heart? What is it in your life, in your circle of influence, that breaks your heart? See, for you, maybe it's poverty. Maybe it's kids that aren't getting help at home. Maybe it's kids whose parents could no longer take care of them and now they've been shuffled into foster care. Maybe it's the lack of clean drinking water somewhere in the world. Or maybe it's kids in a country that have absolutely no access to health care or education or even consistent food in their life on a daily basis. Maybe it's people right here around you right now with physical or mental or emotional challenges who have been written off by the world around them. Maybe it's the injustice that you see or the racism that you see happening around you on a daily basis. And let me just say this, if you're having trouble discovering what breaks your heart and what your purpose and meaning could be for your future, sometimes you won't know what breaks your heart until you're willing to take the risk of stepping outside your own worldview. Hello. Y'all okay? Sometimes you won't know what breaks your heart until you're willing to take the courageous step of stepping outside of the things you see every single day. Seeing it through somebody else's eyes. Seeing it through somebody else's poverty. I've seen it through somebody else's upbringing. I've seen it through somebody else's color. For those of you who have been around here for any amount of time, you've heard me tell countless stories about our care point in Guatemala City. 7 years ago, we made a decision to do global impact just a little bit differently at CORE. For those of you who have been raised in church or been around church most of your life, you know that the standard way, the typical way that most churches do global impact is that they support a missionary or missionaries who then go do the work in that particular country or around the world. And there's nothing wrong with that approach. We just made a decision that we wanted something that would be a little bit more personal to every single one of us. Something that was built off the back of relationship within that country that we got to go experience, not just give to, but that we got to invest into, not just with our money, but also with our time, with our experiences. And so we came across an organization that gave us the opportunity to do just that. An organization that gave us an opportunity to go into partnership with a care point. Care points located all across the world, and Krista and I got an opportunity to go visit several of them and then to say, hey, here's the one that we feel like resonates with our heart. Here's the one that we feel like God is calling us to that gives us the most opportunity to make the difference that we're capable of making. And we came across Puerta de Esperanza, right smack dab in the middle of Guatemala City, one of the poorest countries in the world. This care point is located in the poorest part of the city, in one of the poorest cities in the entire world, right smack dab in the middle of La Terminal Market. And literally, Krista and I, we've now been there 5 or 6 times to our care point. And every time I visit my care point, our care point, my heart and my eyes are open to something new and something different. Every time I visit and step outside of my own world view, that my heart breaks in a completely new way. And guess what? Oftentimes, that's necessary for every single one of us. See, we began to see this consistent theme at our care point. Our care point provides a central location. They service over 200 kids right there in one neighborhood every single day. Healthcare, education, tutoring, and food on a daily basis that the kids will not, cannot get at home. And we started to see this reoccurring theme as we went, that when we went back time after time, that kids were showing up at our care point with spots, with sores all over them. And as we showed up and we began to ask and they began to talk about it, they termed it that these kids simply had skin disease. And we sat down and we started talking with our doctor and nurses who serve our care point. They were like, it's not skin disease. What these kids have is a never-ending case of bed bugs. That within our community, at our care point, essentially every single one of our families either lives in the projects or they live in a shanty that is essentially made out of old pallets and whatever scrap metal they can find. And they make this inside of the market, just one after another, 10 by 10 room. And essentially the doctors were like, we go in and we find bed bugs on a little kid because there's 5 of them sleeping in one twin bed together. And so we go in and we treat that bed and we get the bed bugs out. But there's no real way for us to get rid of the bed bugs because when you're living in conditions like that, the bed bugs don't really go away or die off. All they do is go to the bed next door. They crawl under the pallet wood and they go to the bed next door, waiting for the gases to wear off, and then they just find them their way back. And there's no way for us to do anything about it. And this is just a never-ending thing that the kids are always going to have to live with, these sores and this hurt all over their body. We witness our 8-year-old kids that we support going off to the market to work every single day because their dad is a drunk, their mom died in childbirth, and grandma is now stricken with taking care of them, and she's sick as well. And their 6- and 4- and 2-year-old siblings have to have some way to eat. And so as the 8-year-old, they're responsible for the one trying to make the money to ensure that there's something to put on the table for their little siblings to survive. That most families within our care point have had to survive on about 25 cents a day. In the 1 year we went, one of the things we do every year now, because I just believe it's so powerful and it's such an incredible experience for us to be able to help and to step in, is we visit the projects in Guatemala City. And essentially, it's just giant cinder block buildings. And it's 8 by 8 rooms, about 6-7 stories high within the projects. And you go to every single one of these houses, and it's like there's 7 people in this one, there's 8 people in this one, there's 10 people in this one. And as we were traveling around, we take coffee and we take sandwiches to every single one of the houses, and we just have giant shopping carts that we put everything into, and we're like carrying them up 10 flights of stairs to deliver food and drinks to as many people as we possibly can. And one year, one of our boys that we support who has absolutely nothing was like, hey, I want to go with you guys. I want to do this with you. And so we were traveling around with him. And before I knew it, I turned around and my little boy, who there was no assurance that there was going to be food on his table when he returned home that night, had a napkin in his hand. And he reached out his hand and he handed me this napkin. As I took the napkin from his hand and I peeled back the top layer of the napkin, what I found is what looked like a square piece of cornbread. It was a piece of bread that he had gone into the market with his own money and purchased a piece of bread. And he said, here, you've got to try this. This is so good. I wanted you to have it. And in that very moment, I don't know that it was safe, but how can you say no to not eating that? But in that very moment, my heart broke in a completely new and different way. The heart and the empathy and the compassion and the generosity of a little boy who had absolutely nothing. And here I am in all of my comforts thinking I'm making some big sacrifice to step into their world. Oftentimes, it's necessary for us to step into our world and stop turning our back on the discomforts and the hurts and the messes of the world around us, and to simply allow our hearts to break and the tears to fall. Because when we do, it begins to peel back the curtain on the next step God is calling you into. It may not be comfortable. It may not be easy. It may not be financially prudent. But it will make an impact. It will turn your future into a future of significance. See, we can't keep ignoring the world's discomfort in our own comfort. If we do, we will miss opportunity after opportunity to make a difference with the time we have left on this earth. We have to be people who are willing to first sit down and cry. And then once we do that, the way in which we begin to continue moving towards our purpose and our calling is once we sit down and we answer the question of what breaks my heart, then we have to be people who are willing to kneel down and pray. In verse 4, Nehemiah's story continues. In fact, for days I mourned, fasted, and prayed to the God of heaven. Then I said, O Lord, God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps his covenant of unfailing love with those who love him and obey his commands, listen to my prayer. Look down and see me praying night and day for your people, Israel. That now I've seen the brokenness of the world around me, the city around me. God, show me what the next step is. God, show me what I'm supposed to do. God, show me what difference I can make. God, show me what sacrifice I'm being called to make for the sake of other people's lives. And you see, what I believe with all of my heart is this. If it's big enough to cry about, it's big enough to pray about. And you see, oftentimes, if you're a Christ follower like me, we have this tendency to make prayer our last resort. Like, oh, I've tried everything else. I guess the only thing left to do now is to pray about it. And I just imagine the God of the universe like, hello, I hold the world in my hand and you've turned me into your last resort. Like me, pee on me, one of a billion, I guess I've done everything I can. And so I guess the only thing left to do is to see if God can do anything about it. Come on, y'all. There is an opportunity that lies in wait, an opportunity that is too big for us to accomplish on our own, individually and collectively. That's the heartbeat of Core Community Church. We want a mission, we want a vision that's too big for us to accomplish on our own. There is that opportunity that lies in waiting for every single one of us. And the only way we move towards it, the only way we turn ordinary into extraordinary, is if we say, God, you got to step in. God, I need you. God, open the right doors. God, do things that don't make sense. God, give me clarity. God, pull the right people to the table that can do the things that I can't do to make this possible. You see, when we journey through Nehemiah's story, we see him continue to come back to prayer again and again and again. As Nehemiah was trying to find his purpose, as he was chasing his purpose, what we see, we have over 11 accounts within this short story of Nehemiah's life where there are prayers just like this one, where Nehemiah wasn't just praying over his food. It wasn't just the same old goodnight prayer. Nehemiah came back to, Lord, show me what I'm supposed to do. Lord, open this door. Lord, do what doesn't make sense here. And again and again and again, he just kept praying prayers like this one. God, put me in the middle of the most uncomfortable so that I can make the biggest difference. Check this out in verse 11. Oh Lord, please hear my prayer. Listen to the prayers of those of us who delight in honoring you. Please grant me success today by making the king favorable to me. Put it into his heart to be kind to me. And some of us are like, Ben, that doesn't make sense. I don't get how that's a prayer for more courage. Let me set the table for y'all. You know essentially what Nehemiah is praying for here? I'm going to go to the king and ask him for something big. Please help him to not chop my head off today. Literally. I'm supposed to be happy and content just being in the presence of the king. And I'm going to go and ask him for something that proves I am not happy where I'm at. I'm feeling called to more. And in response to that, the king has every right to right there on the palace floor, chop my head off and end my life. Lord, please grant me favor in his eyes. Lord, please open up this door. Lord, please do something in his heart that doesn't make a lick of sense. You see, here's what's so incredible about Nehemiah's story. Nehemiah was an absolute leadership genius. Like, pick up any leadership book today and read through it and read the characteristics of what great leaders have, and what you'll find is that Nehemiah lived almost every single one of those out. Nehemiah delegated, Nehemiah empowered, Nehemiah trusted, he persevered, he innovated. Yet there was a constant in Nehemiah's story that rose above his leadership competencies. You know what that constant was? Prayer. He bathed every moment, every situation, every opportunity in prayer along the way. Here's the final key, y'all. You see, walking through the first two steps is necessary to discovering our purpose, our meaning in this life, and living out something that is lasting and makes an impact. But if we stop at step two, we might as well not have done the first two steps, period. That if all we allow ourselves to do is look at the messes and cry and then pray about the messes in our world, we are missing out on the opportunity that God has laid before us. Because at some point, seeing and praying about it has to turn into doing something about it. You see, at some point in this process, in order to chase the purpose God has for our lives to do the good work, we have to stand up and act. We have to stand up and act. And all too often, as Christ followers, we get into this habit of looking as if step number two is the final step. I'm just going to pray about it and let God do whatever he wants to do. I'm just going to pray about it and step back and Jesus take the wheel. And sometimes God is like, no, I wanted to do this with you. I didn't want to do it for you. I wanted to do it with you. Well, God, I've been praying about it for the last 6 years of whether I'm supposed to get involved or not. Sometimes it's time to stop using the crutch of prayer and to stand up and get in the game. Stand up and act and do something. Even if it doesn't make sense. Even if it will cost you something. That's exactly what Nehemiah did. In chapter 2, verse 4, it says this. Nehemiah came into the palace floor, and the king could tell that something was wrong with Nehemiah. And so the king asked, well, how can I help you? With a prayer to the God of heaven. It's like one last prayer. God, please don't let him chop my head off. I replied, if it pleases the king, and if you are pleased with me, your servant, send me to Judah to rebuild the city where my ancestors are buried. Nehemiah looked at the hurt. He looked at the difficulty. And instead of seeing the impossibility, he chose to see the opportunity. And he stood up and act. And he had the thought of, my city is a mess, and somebody has to do something. So why not me? Some part of your world is a mess, and somebody has to do something. So why not you? About 9 years ago, Krista and I began to have this tug on our heart towards something different and towards our hometown. Shelby is home for both of us. We're both born and bred here. Many of you have heard me talk about this before, but I've only worked at two different churches since I've become an adult. We loved them both. The place I came from before this, I absolutely loved New Point. And it was comfortable. And there were great leaders ahead of me. And I was placed on a track in which there were growth opportunities and advancement opportunities ahead of me. And it's a place that Krista and I could have stayed for forever. It's a place that we could have raised a family. It's a place where we could have done ministry together. And yet there was this reality as both of us looked back at what was home for us. And we had connections here and family here and friends here. And we began to hear stories of heartbreak and stories of divorce and stories of things that just weren't the way they should be and drifting happening. And as we looked back, our hearts began to break. And what we began to realize is that the easy step would have been just to stay where we're at. That wasn't what God was calling us to. We couldn't sit on the sidelines anymore. We couldn't take the comfortable approach anymore. And so I sat up a lunch with a guy that I knew, a friend of mine. And every month we began to sit down and we just talked. And it was a first step for me, and I'm not sure that he even knows this to this day. A guy who called CORE home. And I knew a little bit of what was taking place and what they were walking through. And I thought, man, this is a first step of courage. Like, I just want to begin to have conversations. God, whatever doors you want to open, whatever you want to do, whatever you want to reveal, I'm asking you to do it. I'm stepping out, and I just want to have some conversations. And a year went by, month after month after month, just conversations about the local church, about my heart, about our heart, about what's going on, about the hurts in this city, and absolutely no movement. A little bit over a year into the process, there were some things that had shifted and an opportunity had opened up here, and I decided to throw my hat into the ring. And for reasons still unbeknownst to me, the leadership team decided to give me a chance. A 28-year-old kid, wet behind the ears, who had never been in a position of leadership like that up until this point, decided to hand over the keys. And to chase a passion and a mission and a vision alongside of me. And y'all, 7 years later, what I can attest to, and please, y'all, you do not need to, please do not come up to me afterward and like, oh, Ben, yes, you do. Yes, you can. To this day, what I know beyond a shadow of a doubt is this. I am not good enough to lead this place. I'm not a good enough leader to lead y'all. I'm not a good enough leader to lead our staff. What I know to this day, I don't have enough biblical knowledge. I'm not smart enough. I don't have every skill that's necessary to do everything I could do within this position. But here's the good news. God doesn't do his best work on the back of prerequisites. He doesn't do his best work on the back of qualified men and women. He does his best work on the back of an ounce of courage out of ordinary people. You see, God plus one always equals extraordinary. Me left to my own, I will always be ordinary. I will always be less than.
But when I begin to chase the mission and the calling and the vision that he has for my life and my future, the same for yours, he bridges that gap and he turns it into something extraordinary. He multiplies it into something better. You see, the reality is there is something bigger waiting for you. And you don't have to be appointed by man if you are called by God to start chasing it. And so here's my challenge to you. At lunch today, in order to start moving towards that, what would it look like on this day to answer three questions? And maybe you need to write it down and you need to ask your spouse, and your spouse needs to ask you to hold you accountable to this. First question is this: what is it that breaks my heart? If you don't have an answer to that question, then this is a turning point in your story, because you get an opportunity to figure out the answer to that question. What breaks my heart? Two, simple. The first one was hard. The second one is yes or no. When I discover the answer to question one, am I willing to start praying about it? Am I willing to start asking the questions of my Heavenly Father, what do you want me to do? What's my next step? What's the step of courage that you're calling me to? What doors need to be open? What courageous step do I need to do to quit this, to walk into that, to say no to this, to say yes to that? Will you start to bathe it in prayer? And then number three, what's one action step that I can take to start moving towards that? It doesn't have to be huge. It doesn't have to be something that fixes it today. What's one action step that I can take right here, right now, to start moving towards the thing that breaks my heart? Here's what I know, y'all. When we become courageous enough to start with answering those three questions, you put yourself on a path to begin to live a life of more significance. You begin to chase something that can only be defined by our Heavenly Father as the good work he has designed for you to do from this day forward. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, we thank you for being a God who sees more in us than what we oftentimes see in ourselves. God who isn't good with the status quo in our life. A God who's calling us to change, calling us to more. But yet also a God who walks beside us as we embark on the challenges it takes to move towards that more. As we walk through the difficulties and the sacrifices and the loneliness and the attacks and the failures along the way. But also a God who sees more than we see and knows what lies on the other side. I believe with all of my heart, whether we're sitting in this room, we're 12, or 16, or 24, or 84, God, you have something for us. But it requires us to be courageous enough to no longer turn our backs to the pain and the hurt and the messes around us, but to lean in, to see it, to pray about it, and then to step into it. The world is waiting. Somebody is waiting for us to do what only we can. Start moving in that direction. It's in your name I pray.